Radio Prague News.
The European Commission has launched proceedings before court action against the Czech Republic over VisaPoint, the foreign ministry's system for foreigners' registration. A draft of the 2014 state budget reckons with a deficit of 110 billion crowns. And the Czech Photovoltaic Industry Association has rejected accusations of data manipulation made by the Energy Regulatory Office. The European Commission has launched proceedings before court action against the Czech Republic over VisaPoint, the foreign ministry's system for foreigners' registration. The move comes following a complaint from Czech Ombudsman Pavel Varvatovsky, who alerted the EC to problems with the system's operation and claimed that there were no legal grounds for making such a system compulsory to applicants for long-term residence. The EC is expecting a response from the Czech authorities within 10 weeks. After that, it will decide whether or not to launch proceedings over breach of EU law. A draft of the state budget for 2014 reckons with a deficit of 110 billion crowns, the Daily Lidové Noviny reported on Monday. The budget cuts funding for the transport and education portfolios while increasing expenditures for the ministries of agriculture and industry. The deficit is 5 billion higher than that planned by the previous centre-right government of Petr Nečas. However, the expected deficit should remain well under the target of 3% of GDP. The government is to send the draft budget to the Lower House by the end of September. However, MPs will only be able to debate it 2 months later, after the early general elections. Civic Democratic Deputy Chairwoman Miroslava Němcová has said she wants to head the party's Prague ballot in the upcoming general elections. The ballot is to be finalised by the party's Prague leadership on Tuesday night. Ms. Němcová would thus run against Topolnai leader Karel Schwarzenberg, the Social Democrats' choice for Prague leader, former trade union head Jaroslav Zavadil, and Green Party leader Ondřej Liška, among others. The Czech Photovoltaic Industry Association has rejected accusations of data manipulation made by the Energy Regulatory Office. The ERO claimed that the Association of Solar Power Producers had doctored energy production figures in order to get more money from the state. The office said that the production hours stated far exceeded the amount of sunlight the Czech Republic gets annually, which are 1,000 hours of sunlight on average and were closer to the climatic conditions of California. The Czech Photovoltaic Industry Association on Monday sharply denied the allegations, saying the average amount of sunlight in this part of the world was between 1,200 and 1,800 hours a year, and moreover stressed that it was possible to produce solar energy in overcast conditions as well. Czech TV management is reported to have fired the head of the station's new media department, Pavlína Kvapilová. Mrs. Kvapilová, who has held the post since the section was established in October of 2011, recently stood up for her colleague Daniela Drtinová, who was abruptly taken off a high-profile Czech TV current affairs programme. There has been speculation that Drtinová was replaced under political pressure due to her tough interviewing style. Kvapilová has refused to comment on the developments. Two-thirds of Czechs are unhappy with the state of the economy, which they describe as bad to very bad. According to the results of a survey conducted by the CVVM polling agency, 55% of respondents said they expected a further deterioration of the economy. Over 30% predicted stagnation, and only 6% of respondents said they expected an improvement. Despite indications that the longest recession in the country's modern history appears to be over, Czechs are more pessimistic in their predictions than their counterparts in Poland, Hungary or Slovakia. One in three Czechs lie in their CV, but the majority of employers never bother to verify the information given, according to the outcome of a study conducted by Screening Solutions. The agency says that one in three Czechs stretch the truth in the amount of work experience they have and the responsibilities they shouldered in their previous positions. Some also lie about their education, providing their would-be employer with a fake diploma. According to Screening Solutions, 55% of Czech employers employers fail to verify the information given, and if they make any attempt to get further details, they rely on the references provided in the CV. Finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The start of the week should be partly cloudy to overcast, with scattered showers and day temperatures reaching 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Danielle Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the school year begins, but tens of thousands of Czech children haven't found a place at public kindergartens. We'll have all the news from the world of Czech sport, and in one-on-one, we meet a man who spent time in the uranium mines in communist Czechoslovakia before emigrating to Canada, where he was a successful scientist. All that's coming up in today's program. Although a short baby boom peaked in the Czech Republic in 2011, parents are still finding it difficult to get their children into public kindergartens. In fact, state preschools haven't had enough places for a few years now, and some employers are coming up with their own ways of helping staff return to work from maternity leave. Masha Walensky has the details.
The beginning of the school year this week brings disappointment to a few thousand mothers around the Czech Republic who were hoping to return to the workplace and leave their preschoolers in the care of professionals. Although official statistics claim that public education was provided to more than 97% of the 3 to 5 year olds, the reality in some school districts, especially for parents with younger children, parents in Brno have had the toughest time, with more than 55% of applying children having been denied a place. Sabina Tomíšková, mayor of the Brno North District, which had only a 40% acceptance rate this year, says there's not much that can be done.
Since Brno North and Brno Center are two city districts with the biggest population, it's logical that our statistics are also the highest. Our main goal for now is to find a place for all the 3-year-olds, not the younger children.
The district is planning to open another kindergarten in the next few months for around 100 students, which will still leave some 350 children out of the classroom. The situation leaves parents with few options: placing their children in a private kindergarten, hiring a nanny, or for one of the caregivers, in the vast majority of cases the mother, to stay at home for at least another year. With private kindergarten fees ranging between 4 and 20,000 crowns a month, many parents simply cannot afford this option, and family budgets still often suffer with one parent out of work. A small minority of employers have begun opening in-house daycare centers to resolve the problem and encourage caregivers' earlier return to the workplace. Recently, universities have also joined this trend. The Technical University in Ostrava welcomed the first children of their staff and students this week to a new on-campus kindergarten. For the dean of the university, Ivo Vondrák, this is one way to become an attractive employer for young talent.
We have many young people here working on scientific projects, and it's often a problem for them to take care of their young children and keep working. We don't want to lose them, so we've decided to provide this service. This year, we are even offering our kindergarten service for free, thanks to support from EU operational funds.
Experts say that the shortage of places in public kindergartens in the most populous districts will last for another 3 to 4 years. For now, though, many mothers will have to rely on their own or their employer's ingenuity if they want to return to the workplace within 2 years of giving birth.
Thank you for that report, Masha Walensky. Moving on, it's time now for all the news from the world of Czech sport.
The
We begin with rowing and success for Andrei Sinek, who topped the podium in the single sculls at the World Rowing Championships in Chungju, South Korea. The Czech, who's 30, opened up a lead early on in Sunday's final, gradually extending it to finish 3.5 seconds ahead of his closest rival. Speaking after the race, a smiling Sinek said he'd realised early on that the gold medal was within reach.
After 500 metres, I knew that I would win unless I made some technical mistake, because I was going well and I knew they couldn't beat me. The race looked simple, but it was actually complicated because the climatic conditions here are terrible. It's very humid and you sweat non-stop. It's not so bad today, but it has been one of the more difficult championships.
The Czech national soccer squad have gathered in Prague ahead of two important World Cup qualifiers, against Armenia at the city's Eden Stadium on Saturday and away to group leaders Italy next Tuesday. The Czechs are currently in third place in Group B behind Bulgaria, who have 1 point more. And the eyes of the world were on Prague's Eden Stadium on Friday, when it hosted the UEFA Super Cup between Bayern Munich and Chelsea. Despite a stunning performance, the latter's Czech goalkeeper Petr Cech found himself on the losing side after a penalty shootout. Cech has been reunited with Jose Mourinho at Chelsea. He told reporters after the game that he welcomed the return of the manager, with whom he won several trophies first time round.
I'm glad that we have another chance to be as successful as we were before, and hopefully we can go even further, because this, I think, the aim, the motivation, and the goal for all of us to keep winning. So if we can do that again and even better, then obviously it would be a perfect scenario.
Ice hockey and the Czech Republic didn't have the best time of it at the Czech Games, part of the four-nation Euro hockey tour, which ended on Sunday. The hosts were beaten 3-1 by Finland and 2-0 by Sweden, before saving some face with a 2-1 win over Russia in their final game in Pardubice. Despite the Czechs' poor goals tally, coach Alois Hadamčík said he was pleased with their overall performance. Hadamčík will next week announce his broad squad for February's Winter Olympics in Sochi. Finally, tennis, and Tomáš Berdych is the only Czech singles player left in the US Open, as the competition goes into its second week. Berdych has yet to lose a set at Flushing Meadows this year, and on Sunday defeated France's Julien Benneteau 6-love, 6-3, 6-2. He will now face Stanislav Wawrinka of Switzerland for a place in the quarterfinals. That's all the sport for today. Now we come to the last part of our programme today with One-on-One. Josef Svoboda is a professor, Arctic ecologist and author. Born in Prague in 1929, Mr. Svoboda studied science and philosophy at Masaryk and Charles Universities. Imprisoned for 9 years by the communist regime in 1949 for alleged treason and espionage, he later emigrated in 1968 to Canada, where he's been living ever since. Dominic Yoon spoke to Josef Svoboda in Canada and started by asking him about his earliest memories of growing up in pre-war Czechoslovakia.
Well, I'm already old man and it's far away to remember. But yes, I was born in Prague and my father was a locomotive engineer and drove the locomotives and trains. So my early childhood was very poetic in this respect, that I was able or allowed to drive the locomotive for a few meters in front and again back. And of course then we had to go through the 6 years of the Nazi occupation.
Were you able to live a semi-normal life during those times?
It was a life under duress, under the pressure, under the threat of all kinds of possibilities. My father could have been accused of all kinds of sabotage, perhaps if the trains would not arrive in time, or if he would be suspected that he would do some kind of malice, you know, to the system.
At this point, you were growing into a young adult. So what are your memories of witnessing the rise of the communist regime and the mood in the country?
There was kind of sobering, you know, awakening. Is this what we really wanted? You know, we thank them for the liberation. Of course, Nazis were a terrible regime. But on the other hand, what they are bringing here is not acceptable either. I graduated from the high school in 1948. And already at that time, I was known with some reserve versus that new system which was coming. Already the high school action committee, which was run by those young communists, did not give me a recommendation for the university. However, I was already assisting at the university with one professor there. So he called the chairman of the committee, student, and asked him, look, you should not condemn young person, you know, definitely to give him a chance. And so I was admitted to the university and I chose science and philosophy. And I finished one full year at the university from 48 to 49. However, in 49, I was then finally arrested for these alleged crimes.
So tell me about that. Were you a troublemaker or were you just outspoken?
In our philosophical seminars, we were discussing still concept of democracy and these things, because it was 1 year they could not just clamp at us completely. And one day, one of my colleagues said, well, with the talking here, we wouldn't sort of change the system. We have to do something about it. I knew what he means, but I was not prepared, really, to go to some hard underground. So I said, well, what should we do? I am not prepared to take arms, or so I don't even have any, and so on. He said, no, that's not necessary. We need to collect information from the West, and you could be helpful in that respect. So in this, I somehow committed myself to be assisting in this, either collecting or passing the information. And then that became actually fine, because the whole organization was already actually organized by the communist initiators, you know.
So the anti-communist organization was organized by the communists deliberately to root out people who were opposed.
Exactly, to catch all the hot heads. And that's what happened. So finally I was sentenced in a big group, but within the big group, they made a small group of 8 students just from the Masaryk University, and I was among them.
And what were you hoping to achieve if the group had actually been like a legitimate thing? What were you trying to, democratic dialogue or help from the West, or what exactly were you after?
That came up in the court hearing, and finally, what did you want to do? We are popular democracy, we are those people for people. What you, who are also from, let's say, workers' origin, what did you want to change? Well, at the time I was only a student, so I said, I'd like to have a democracy, Masaryk democracy, or the democracy of Western type, you know, where you can elect and unelect people, you know. And that's, no, this is the dictatorship of proletariat, and we have to now take power, and later we would allow more freedom or something like that, you see. So that was the discussion during the court.
So you ended up being sentenced for treason and espionage, and you spent 9 years in jail, so those years must have been extremely difficult for you.
Well, objectively, they were very difficult. Nobody would like to do it, I would like to repeat it either. But because we were young, at least I was in my 20s, no, I was arrested when I was 20 years old, we had still the biological energy, and we have the enthusiasm and the ideal that we are sort of serving or suffering for a good cause. And because there's majority of us were political prisoners, so we enforced that idea, and we were unbreakable, really, by the regime. They try, you know, always and many ways. But the more they pushed, the more we were resistant. So there were hunger, there were cruelties and all kinds of inhumane actions. They put you in a hole for a month, you see, barely fed you.
So they wanted you to say that communism was in fact great and you were overtly refusing?
They didn't formulate it that way. They said, okay, if you would cooperate, maybe you would sign a piece of paper that you would, you know, inform us about the others, you know, so we would help you to get out of the prison sooner. And of course, 99% of people said no. And then were again maybe oppressed more during the execution of the sentence. Then there were times when we were, let's say, I have worked for 4 years in uranium mines, you see, as a slave worker, as a prison worker in mines.
And so part of the 9 years was spent, exactly, was 4 years in uranium mines.
In Joachimstal or Yakimov, you know, that's where Madame Curie got her uranium for her experiments. We did got enough of the radiation load in our bodies as well. I was trying to avoid it. I was trying to escape from the hot spots wherever I could. But some people didn't have that knowledge, maybe, so they were exposed more. I met so many great people that is very difficult to enumerate them.
So tell me about the life you've built up in Canada. You've been working as an Arctic ecologist. Obviously, Canada is an ideal place for that because it's got a huge Arctic terrain.
Well, that's very true. Of course, I was not geared to go to work in Canadian North, but I wanted to finish my degrees. And for that, I had to first enroll in 2 universities. And I finished my bachelor first because I had credits throughout my Czechoslovakian experience, but no diploma. And then I chose the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Alberta. And the professor who read my application said, I just need a person like you who had experience already in research. And if you wish, you can go with me. And we have to be here in June 3rd, because June 5th we are flying to the north, to the high north, to the high Arctic. I didn't know much about it. I just say yes, because it was a very adventurous, you know, to be an explorer, researcher in high north. It took three years to become to finish my PhD. And before I finished, I already got a job of assistant professor at the University of Toronto. And I stay in the job for 22 years before retirement.
So what kind of things have you researched?
You know, it was a big, big project. It was so-called International Biological Program. That was part of World Biological Program, studying all big ecosystems, like tropical forest or prairies or northern boreal forest, and also tundra. The treeless landscape, you know, behind the tree line, and it's subcontinent, you know, Canadian Arctic is as big as India.
When you were in the Arctic amidst the massive wide spaces, did you ever reflect on the idea that you'd been in prison in a small confined space and suddenly here you were and that was the big journey of your life?
It was like a gift of God for all what you suffered before. Because if, let's say, in 1968, when the Russians came and let's say the cage clapped down, if somebody would say, you see, don't despair, you know, and you would move to Canada and become a university professor, then I would say, oh, you go and let your mind to be checked because you need some psychiatric treatment. And that exactly happened, you know, that exactly happened. It's rare in life, but it happens.
Josef Svoboda, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you as well.
Josef Svoboda was talking to Dominic Yoon, and that interview was first broadcast in December of last year. You can find it and hundreds more editions of One on One on our website. And if you've got any comments about today's program, please share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. And we're on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.